Hello and welcome to The Fortunate Son, coming to you live from Tower Studios. I'm your host, JT, and I'll be your guide as we explore the human condition and the journey of life. Good evening, everyone. I hope that you're having a great week. I hope that everything's going well in your neck of the woods, wherever you are in the world. I wanted to make sure that I thank all those out there who are dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Anyone who's listening, any of the healthcare workers or essential workers, and everyone, you know, who may still be hunkered down in their homes or just returning to work. I know it's got to be pretty surreal to be going back to work for the first time in, you know, a month, 2 months for a lot of people. So, yeah, tip my cap to you. I hope that you have a great week, as enjoyable as you possibly can. Tonight's show, I wanted to cover over something that's quite important for many of our younger listeners especially. So after I get through the news, I'm going to discuss basically how to set yourself up for your life through your retirement. And it's something, when we're younger, it's very easy to sit there and say, oh, well, I'll get to that. But I want to come at it with a different bit of an angle, just because of some of the different communities and cultures I've been involved with. And basically, folks, what I want to say to the younger people in the audience is, it's great for you to look after your families, but don't forget to look after yourself. So we'll be discussing that a bit more in depth in just a little bit. But first this evening, I just wanted to cover over, as I've said before, the segment that is Three Reasons Why Life Doesn't Suck. So on each episode, I'm going to do my best to bring you three positive articles that I can find on something positive that's going on in the world. And the first one comes from the www.goodnewsnetwork. And this was published on the 20th of May of this year, and this one is titled, Sir Captain Tom Moore is overawed after being officially knighted for his $40 million fundraiser. Now, for those of you who may not know, Captain Moore, he was a World War II veteran, and when the pandemic first started off in the UK, he decided that he wanted to raise £1,000 for the NHS, which is the National Health Service in the UK. Now, no matter what your feelings are on the pandemic, the fact that this man, who was in his 90s, he was 99 actually, before he did the fundraising, the fact that he wanted to raise this money, you know, is pretty amazing. Most people, you know, not all, but many people, once they get into even their 60s and 70s, they're basically just ready to retire. They're not really worried about things like this. But Captain Moore, he had had a hip replacement, I believe it was, either a hip replacement or a knee replacement, and he wanted to do something good for the NHS as a thank you. So he started out just wanting to raise £1,000 by doing 100 laps in his backyard, you know, because first off, isolation, and second off, he probably, you know, at 99 years old, you're not going out, you're not running marathons. Well, anyway, he ended up raising £32 million, which is $40 million US. That's pretty amazing. And I guess the major part there, he's become a national hero, basically, in the UK and England. He got a promotion. He got a letter from the Queen for his birthday on the 30th of April. He received over 40,000 cards from people. I mean, you know, he truly has been great for the nation. And it's one of those things that, you know, it just goes to show, you know, he didn't make a big fuss about it. He just went about raising this money, and he ended up doing a fantastic thing. Now, you can have all kinds of arguments about, you know, did he need to raise the money? Shouldn't it be government funded? So on and so forth. But the fact is, again, he saw something that he wanted to improve, and he went out and he did it. And again, at a time in his life when so many people would, you know, be happy to just sit in their lounge chair and call it a day. But not Captain Tom. So basically, this story just gives you a bit of a recap of that for those of you who may not know. And it also says the fact that, you know, he's been knighted. Now, for those of you in the U.S., I fully understand that you might not understand the importance of this, but being knighted for U.K. citizens and people in the Commonwealth, as we are here in New Zealand, you know, it's never been major thing for me, being from the U.S., but being knighted is very much the equivalent of getting, you know, presidential honors. So it is quite an important thing for some people. And the greatest part about it for me with Captain Tom is he's such a humble person. You know, he's done so much in his life. He fought in the war. He helped keep Britain, you know, free from the Nazis. And here he is, you know. Whereas, like I say, many people would have just packed it up by now, but he's gone out and made this massive fundraising effort and, you know, done something really positive. So, you know, it's something really good to see. The UK, again, most people should know, but for those of you who don't know, you know, they went through a huge issue with COVID-19. You know, the Prime Minister was in hospital in intensive care. So it's been great to see someone that the UK can really rally around. So I definitely tip my cap to Captain Tom. And I will be putting links for all of these articles in the show notes, as I always do. So the next article is also from the Good News Network, and this one was published on the 20th of May, and this one is titled, When Collapsed Tourist Trade Leaves Elephants Hungry, Woman Devises Win-Win Situation with Local Farmers. So I'll just read a couple of paragraphs here. It says, in Asia, elephants working in the tourist trade have been idled by COVID-19 worldwide shutdowns. It's not cheap to feed elephants, especially when they're not bringing in income for their owners to feed properly. Thankfully, Carol Buckley and her organization, Elephant Aid International, have created a win-win solution for tourists, trade elephants, and farmers in Nepal. Over the course of the last decade, EAI has strived to improve the treatment of elephants in captivity by working directly with elephant owners, government officials, charities, tourist facilities, and elephant welfare groups. The organization is also in the midst of launching a new elephant sanctuary in North America so pachyderms being released from captivity can finally have a place to retire. So basically, the article just goes into a bit more in depth about how this agency, you know, kind of brought these groups together, you know, help fund some of these initiatives. And they basically say that the farmers had no one to harvest the produce growing in their fields. So rather than being forced to let the food rot, Buckley and her team found farmers who were willing to sell the produce, arranged for workers to harvest the food, and then delivered it to the elephants. So basically, the farmers volunteered the food. They found people who would pick the food and then give it to elephants. So I think everyone won out of this. I think that the farmers and the laborers were paid and the elephants got fed. So again, it's just a small story of a small impact that one person had that had a really good idea. And again, I'll tip my cap to anyone who does something like that. Elephants, you know, the animals in the world in general, I think we as humans, we don't do a good enough job of treating them with a bit of respect and some compassion. Look, I grew up on a farm. We used to harvest our own animals, you know, we used to slaughter our own meat, all of that. But there's nothing wrong with showing a little bit of compassion. I mean, no matter how you look at it, there are going to be vegetarians and vegans who don't agree with eating meat, and that's absolutely fine. That's their prerogative. But for those of us who do, you can be a carnivore and at the same time show a little bit of compassion. So I think it's brilliant that they've done this. And again, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. The third article here is from www.positivenews. And this one is was published on the 7th of May. The words are by Anudra Varashni. And it says, we fought hard, the Maldivian community that saved its island from developers. So basically in the Maldives, which are in the Indian Ocean, as with a lot of kind of tourist resort type islands, oftentimes what happens is that the vast majority of the islands become, you know, tourist hotel spots and so on. And the people who live there, you know, they have to surrender the better islands to allow resorts and the like and the infrastructure to go in. So although, you know, you may think as a tourist, going and traveling to one of these places, you're doing a great thing for the locals. Some places you are, and in some places you're not helping nearly as much as you may think. Again, this isn't a guilt trip. I don't mean to put any guilt or hard feelings on tourists. It's just the reality is for a lot of those local people, they're not the ones making, you know, a large amount of money. Even if they go to work in a resort or something, most of the times they're not going to be making a large amount. So anyway, in the Maldives, they're talking about the island Resto, which is a pretty big spot for tourists who go there to scuba dive, go and see the coral reef and snorkel and that, and they'll stay there in 16 different guest houses. Now, less than a kilometer away, there's Marivaru, which is a little small uninhabited island, and another one named Marivaru Finolu, which is like a sandbank, so you know it doesn't have any stone or anything on it. And they call these picnic islands because they say that, you know, tourists go there to snorkel, sunbathe, have a picnic, and then go back to the main island. Well, anyway, the local community here, they wanted to go out of their way to really protect the reefs and, some of the damage that those resort developments can cause to the reefs and to the ecosystem. So the ownership of this group of islands, the picnic islands, in 2019, it was handed over to the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, to be managed by the council of the local indigenous people. As with a lot of indigenous people around the world and local people, although it's never perfect because oftentimes these people don't have a concept of profit and loss as Westerners do, the beauty of it is that, you know, they know those islands, they know the area better than anyone. And, the reality is that they've lived and died there for many generations most of the time, so they've got a really good idea of how to responsibly look after those resources for all of us. So this is just a very small story about these islands being, you know, basically protected for future use by future generations and tourists, but especially the local people. So again, look, I'm a realist. I've been working most of my life. You can't even say my adult life. I started working when I was in my early teens. So I've had, 30 years of work experience now. And I realized that without an economy and without wages, without businesses, none of us, can afford any of, life's better things, as the saying goes. But there is a fine line to me. And look, there's a fine line between us all living in huts and, weaving grass baskets in it and just completely destroying and polluting the world. So I do think that it's been a really good trend in the last, especially the last 10 years or so, that you're seeing a lot more of these eco-conscious type resorts and vacation destinations. I've seen them as I've went around different places. The last few times I traveled for business within the last few years, it was good. A lot of places were, here in New Zealand, a lot of the places were going along the lines of, we're not going to provide you fresh, clean towels every day. Tell us if you want more. However, we're not going to wash and launder towels for no reason, which I think is brilliant. And again, things like, soap and shampoo and that, we're not going to throw away, a part little bottle that you've used until you've used it. So you tell us when you want more. And again, I think that that's a real positive trend that we should encourage. I know that a lot of times when people are on holiday, they want to pamper themselves. But again, just use a bit of common sense, because if we continue to use things the way that we're using them, money-driven or capitalists among us will admit that the world is not full of infinite resources, and sooner or later we're going to end up using them all up. And I really don't want people in a couple hundred years suffering because we can't use a little bit of self-control in the things that we do. So again, I just think that there is that happy medium to be found in between just being an excessive consumer and, you know, also being a complete rudimentary hunter-gatherer. So I think that there is room in the middle there, and I think it's something that has really been improving, as I say, even in some of the real upscale resorts. So again, you know, there's another positive story for you. So there's our three good reasons why the world doesn't suck. So yeah, hopefully you enjoy those each week. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes for you to follow if you'd like to go over there and yeah, check out the articles in a bit more depth. So hopefully, again, everyone's having a good week, and you're getting your feet under you. The college and university students are getting back in your swing. Hopefully, the workers are back getting used to being back to work, getting back to your commute and everything else. Hopefully, everyone else is settling in as best as they can, those that are back. And, you know, here, it's the same. You know, I'm settling into a good routine with this show and the sister program, the Paranormal Sun. I'm trying to turn out a couple of programs a week each so that I can start to build up a bit of a library for those of you that want to binge listen, or for people discovering the show in the future. And again, you know, time is precious. I don't know when I'll have this time in future. I don't know what the future is going to bring for any of us. So I'd like to have that legacy out there sooner rather than later. So I try and turn these programs out as best as I can. So as I was saying earlier, the main topic tonight, you know, I really want to just discuss, especially for the younger people out there, but for some of the older listeners in the audience, you could look at this more as for your children or your grandchildren's sake. And it's really about setting yourself up for where you want to go in life. It's so easy for all of us. I know for myself, when I was younger, I didn't often think about tomorrow. I think that, as with everyone, it's that way. It's no different than, you know, when you're in school, when you're in your early ages in school, you're not really thinking about a job and what you're going to do after school. And as the years move up, you get closer and closer, you start saying, well, I should have started sooner. And this is something that, honestly, it's been really heartbreaking for me to see some really good people that I've known in life that I've seen suffering, struggling, and also putting undue pressure on younger generations to basically help fund them in their retirement, because some of the cultural aspects of some of the people I've known, but also B, just you know, lack of looking ahead. There are cultures in this world, there are nationalities that, unfortunately for them, a lot of them will pass away at a younger age. A lot of people in the Pacific Island community, for example, Cook Islanders, Niueans, Samoans, Tongans, a lot of them, because of the diet and the change to their diets in the last 100 years, as Europeans have introduced them to things like sugar and fatty foods and mayonnaise and corned beef, all of those sorts of things, being introduced to those things and not having, you know, two or three or four generations to get used to metabolizing those goods and, you know, dealing with it, has led to huge amounts of spikes in diabetes and liver failure, things like that. And therefore, a lot of these people, you know, I've had people say to me who are 30, you know, I'll say, well, you know, what have you done about your retirement? Have you started organizing things? Have you made any plans? And they'll basically say, well, I don't know if I'm going to live to retire. Now, look, it's I can't speak for everyone, and I can't get inside of everyone's head, and I also can't, you know, tell people how to live their lives. But it is a very concerning trend. It's a concerning trend in New Zealand and Australia especially, where we have a, you know, a high proportion in comparison to most countries of Pacific Islanders. And, you know, again, I saw this in the U.S. with a lot of people from Latin America as well, from Mexico and other places. Look, again, folks, you know, we're all different. We grew up, we didn't have a whole lot, but I was taught from a young age the value of money and the value of having it when you need it. Now, I personally feel there's a fine line between enjoying today and planning for tomorrow. So I've never had a problem with someone. Let's just say we'll try and make this really, you know, simple so you can follow along with whatever you're doing. Let's say we've got someone who earns $500 a week after they pay their taxes, right? So that's $2,000 a month, right? Pretty simple math. Okay, let's say they spend $500 a month on rent. So that leaves them $1,500. Let's say they spend another $500 a month between their car and, you know, things like power and the like. So they've got $1,000 left. Okay, now let's say they spend another $100 a week on groceries, so that would leave them $600 a week. Now, out of that $600, you know, what I find so often is that people just don't realize how quickly things chalk up. So again, they're not looking at things from a monthly perspective or a yearly perspective. Most of the time, people just look at it from paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, a friend or family member asks you for $50 or $100, and you see a pair of shoes and you want to get them. And again, everyone's different, and I don't want to preach about it too much. But I was raised, and older generations were raised, that the only things in your life that you should maybe look at borrowing money to get are a house. Definitely a house nowadays. You'd be very hard pressed not to buy a house without a mortgage. And the second thing is, you know, maybe a vehicle if you really needed it, especially if you need it to get to work. But, you know, the reality is there's lots of things I think, and there's lots of things that I personally know that we don't need in life that we do anyway. Okay, so, you know, everything from, you know, going out and getting a coffee. I'll give you a really good example for myself. Now, I've been on a journey for about 7-8 months to try and lose some weight and get back in shape. Now, I've struggled through this quarantine and some other things that have happened in life. Like I say, you know, losing employment's been difficult. But for example, you know, I at least 5 days out of the week, and usually more like six, I'll drink a black coffee. So completely black, no sugar, no cream, right? Because of the calories. Now, I can make one at home if I have an instant coffee. That coffee will probably cost me 10 cents, maybe 20 cents. If I make a brewed coffee, it might be 30 or 40 cents. Now, why would I go out and spend $5 for that coffee? There's no really good reason. I mean, the only really good reason there is if I go out with someone and we're catching up and I want to have a coffee. Now, I know it's not quite the same when you're talking about things like, you know, cream coffees and lattes and mochas. But, you know, that's just one very small example, you know. And for those of you out there with children, I realize that this is different. It can be difficult for you because, you know, people want to provide for their children. But I feel it's very important that, you know, you basically have to map out what your end destination is. So the way to look at retirement, in my mind, is no different than if you're going to plan a holiday. So wherever you are in the world right now, I want you to just close your eyes and say to yourself, I'm going to plan a dream holiday, right? And we'll just make it real simple, you know. We'll give you a budget of $5,000. For each person. So, you know, if you're going with your spouse, you might have $10,000. If you're going alone, you might have $5,000. Now, why am I using that as an analogy? Well, it's the same thing with your retirement, and it's much more important. So many people I've known in life, I've seen, all they've basically done is they've said, well, I'm going to go hard out to get to retirement. And when the day comes that they retire, whether it's at 60 or 65 or 70, whatever the age is, they have no plan. They don't know what they're going to do. They get bored. They spend money they don't have, or they waste money on frivolous things. And there was never really any plan. I know it's not always easy, but again, you know, you really have to sit down and draw the reverse map. So like, you know, in the analogy of your holiday. So if you said, I need to save $10,000. I'm sure if you started with the $10,000 figure, you could work out on your own, each individual, because everyone's different. Some people may be able to save $10,000 in a year. Many people may not be able to save that in 10 years. So it just allows you to draw it out. And it's the same with retirement. So look, I can't speak for all countries out there. I know that you all have your resources. But I can tell people in New Zealand, you know, go and use the sorted.org website and go on there and work out what's your retirement age, you know, how much money do you need? In other words, what kind of retirement life do you want to have? Do you want to have beans on toast? Do you want to be able to travel? Do you want to be able to go on holidays? Do you want to live in a luxury place? You want to live at the beach? So on and so forth. And I would bet that just about every major country that you're in, you're listening to this, you can find the same kind of resources online. Now, you know, life is getting more and more difficult all the time. And yes, look, don't get me wrong. We could have some major event happen in 10 years and none of this matters. You know, I don't want to be ridiculous, but let's just say we had something happen that basically ended, you know, the world as we know it. So let's just say like a meteor or something. So people are living, but, you know, you're just scraping by. Now, yeah, you know, you might look at that time, oh, I should have enjoyed everything when I was younger. Yeah, that's a fair point. But I would argue that the odds of that happening are a lot slimmer than the odds of that not happening. So there's nothing worse than getting to the finish line and saying, I have no money, I have no plan. I either have to put pressure on my children or, you know, younger generations to basically feed me, clothe me, take care of me, or you suffer. And again, as I've said before, you know, one of my favorite proverbs that I've said on the show many times, the best time to plant a tree was 50 years ago. The next best time to plant a tree is now. So even if you are 30 years old or you're 35 years old or you're 40 years old and you've done nothing, go out there, you know, go and talk to your bank, talk to a financial advisor, talk to someone in your family or a friend who is a bit more knowledgeable about money than yourself. I mean, there are people out there in this world who basically all they do is they take their money and they put it in the bank. They either don't know or they're afraid to know or invest in things like shares or precious metals or commodities or cryptocurrency. And I get that it's all very daunting. But like all things, you know, knowledge is power in these instances. And again, you know, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but there are people at the top of the food pyramid who rely on the fact that people down the bottom like us will not figure it out, you know, and they will never become rich. Now, again, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not Jeff Bezos. I'm not any of those guys that have got all the money. I've got a fairly comfortable life that I've worked hard to acquire and try to maintain with my partner's help. But again, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I will tell you this. I've learned a lot from people. There's more that I should have listened to and I should have acted on sooner. I really should have. Now, again, I'm fortunate as well because I've still got time on my hands. You know, I'm in my early 40s. Now, unfortunately, with the way the economy is going right now, it might be a while before I get to go back to work. But, you know, behind the scenes, I work on different things. I try and educate myself. I learn about things like cryptocurrency and the share market and, you know, stocks and bonds and all those sorts of things. So really, it's just like anything, no different than starting a business. You know, my advice is go out there and research, try and learn something. There are ways for you to get into things like this without breaking the bank or without endangering yourself. You know, you can go out and you can dabble in small market funds. For example, in New Zealand, there's a fund called Sharesies where you can go on and you basically you might not be able to buy. So, for example, in the U.S., I think a share of Amazon is generally trades around $1,500, something like that. So maybe you can't afford a share of Amazon. Using a website like this, you go in and you buy a fund, which might, you know, it's a bit like how KiwiSaver works in New Zealand. I can't speak for all countries, but in New Zealand, I would go and buy a certain fund. So I can't say take all my money and buy Apple or take all my money and buy Amazon or take all my money and buy Google. what you do is you buy a fund, and these funds might be the top 10 companies or the top 20 companies, so on and so forth. But, you know, it is something that's really important for you younger generation to get your heads around. The world's changing. It always does. The world's changed a lot in my lifetime. And you've got to stay abreast of what's happening. You know, I know it's boring for some people to follow finances and everything else, but it is a very pertinent thing for you to follow. Things like credit card interest debt. Okay, so you know, again, here's something that's really pertinent for you. So if you take your money and you put it in the bank and it just sits there, I'm actually just going to have a look right now, and I'm going to tell you what a savings account at a bank in New Zealand will get you right now interest-wise, if you just hold on a second here. I know roughly, but I just want to look it up because I want to give you an exact percentage. So savings accounts here. So looking at an online call bank account with my personal bank, which is good because it's not like a CD. Your money's not held, but you know, you're only allowed to take certain amounts of money out of your account each month. Anyway, here you go, folks. This is quite disconcerting, actually, for people who save money. So if you have more than $2,000, and for some of you that's a massive amount, if you have more than $2,000 in this online call account and you don't touch it, you're only going to get 0.70% interest. So that's not even 1% interest, and that's over the course of an entire year. So what does that mean? That means on $2,000, if my math is correct, you would get something like $14 in interest over the course of a year. Now, that's before you pay any fees, and that's before you pay taxes. So you'd be lucky to get $10 for leaving that money in a bank, okay? Now, at the same time, if you've got a credit card, most of the time the credit card interest is going to be 15 or 20%. And I've known some really intelligent people in my life that have had a credit card balance and at the same time have money in the bank. So you've got, so let's say for argument's sake, you've got your $2,000 here in the bank doing nothing for you, really. Your credit card is sitting there with a balance on it. And let's just be nice. And we'll say you're paying 10% interest. So on $2,000 on that credit card, you're paying $200 of fees a year. And the thing is, that interest goes on each month and it accumulates. So it will be more than $200 by the end of the year is what I'm saying, on top of what you borrowed. And most credit cards, you know, actually are more like 20% and up. So it is something, as we all know, we've all known someone who's got into trouble or issues with credit cards and payday loans, things like that. But all I'm saying is, you've really got to be careful with things like this and weigh those risk rewards. Because these are the types of things that financial planners, you know, they charge you a lot of money to tell you really simple things like this. Most of the things they're going to tell you to do, I already know how to do myself. And most of that I've learned, you know, through self-education and things I've learned online. You know, I remember reading papers and reading stock quotes and that long before the internet and keeping tracks of different things. Now, it's the same way with commodities. And so commodities are basically anything that is of value that's traded, right? So commodities can be a bar of gold. Commodities can be oil. Commodities can be wheat. Commodities can be soybeans and, you know, fuel, all sorts of things. But, you know, you should look at least thinking about precious metals. And the thing about precious metals, so precious metals are, you know, gold, silver, platinum, palladium. There are a few others, but those are the major ones. Now, the thing about precious metals and what confuses people so much is the fact that, you know, they say, oh, well, it's just a piece of metal. But I'll tell you this, folks. The U.S. dollar in its current iteration has been around since, I want to say, 1913. So when you look at a U.S. $1 note, it's looked that way since 1913. Now, I know U.S. dollars only really started in the late 1790s, okay? Do you know how long gold has been used as a currency? at least 6,000 years, okay? So basically, as long as civilization has existed, we've been using gold and silver as a currency. Now, why does that matter? Well, what I'm saying is, if you've most of you have heard about, you know, fiat currency crashing and the dollar crash, I'm not Nostradamus and I'm not going to make predictions. But if that happens, those dollars are useless. But if you've got gold or silver, that gold or silver is worth money. And it always has been. And as far as I'm concerned, it always will be. During World War II, pilots who got shot down over Europe and Asia were given gold to carry with them. So if they got in trouble in Asia, they could bribe off people to get them to safety. If you look at some of the James Bond movies, part of their standard kit was always to carry around gold sovereigns, which is a British coin. Gold is universal. Anywhere in the world, anyone wants gold. If I have gold today, right now, and let's just say for argument's sake, a tree falls over, hits my car, and I don't have insurance. If I have gold today, as soon as 8 o'clock in the morning hits, I can be down to a cash converters type place or a gold shop, and I can trade that gold for cash immediately, okay? So what I'm saying is, although some people say, oh, well, you've got a bar, you've got some coins, it's extremely liquid. As long as they're trading in currency wherever you are in the world, you can trade gold and silver in for money. Now, to me, the real importance of gold and silver is around inflation. So for those of you who don't know, the U.S. dollar has lost 96% of its buying power since 1913, since the Federal Reserve took over, right? So basically, what you could buy in 1913 for 4 cents will now cost you $1 to buy, right? So in other words, your purchasing power of your dollar has been going steadily downhill. Gold doesn't gain in value, right? It holds its value. So for example, if you bought gold now, gold is quite high. It's about $3,000 an ounce New Zealand. If they continue this QE, so quantitative easing, again, where they're basically just printing money, printing money, printing money, if the U.S. government continues to do this, that gold is going to go up in value. But it's not. So I know it's confusing, but what I mean by that is, let's say today a block of land, I don't know the size, let's say a small block of land costs you $10,000. Now, if they continue quantitative easing and they just keep printing money, in 2 or 3 years, that same land might cost you $15,000. And in 5 years, it might cost you $20,000. So you see, the value of the land hasn't gone up. The value of the dollar has dropped. So to buy the same amount of land, you need more money. The thing is with the gold, 1 ounce of gold to buy that land or 2 ounces of gold, it will be 2 ounces of gold. Now, it will be 2 ounces of gold in 5 years. It will be 2 ounces of gold in 10 years. Because the reality is the gold will hold its value versus the dollar. There's a famous story that I've always quite liked when it comes to gold. I don't know the exact story, and one day I will look it up. But there was a young Frenchman in the early 1800s who inherited money from someone. So what he did was he took all of the money that he got and he bought all gold, 20-franc gold coins, which at the time, a 20-franc gold coin is about the size of a U.S. nickel. So at that time, it was easy because, you know, when you bought coins, you could buy coin. When you went out and got coins, you could get silver coins, but you could also get gold coins in circulation. So it would be like if now quarters and 50-cent pieces, let's say, were gold and the smaller denominations were silver, and then you had some copper ones like the penny. Well, anyway, he took this trunk or a chest, and he basically took his whole inheritance and he poured it in the bottom of this chest, all these gold coins. Now, he lived 30 years or 40 years basically on this money and retired. Now, the very first week that he had this money, with one 20-franc gold coin, he could pay for his accommodation. So he rented a room so he could pay for that. He could pay for his food. He could pay for his clothes, everything he wanted for this one coin. By the time he died 30 or 40 years later, he could buy the same exact things with this one gold coin. Now, things cost more, but the value of the gold held the value over the franc. So the lesson there is that, you know, gold has always been a hedge against inflation. And gold always holds its value versus fiat currency. So fiat currency is any paper currency that's not backed by a precious metal. So basically, everything in the world right now is fiat currency. I think the franc in Switzerland may be gold-backed, but I'm not sure. So anyway, folks, again, you know, think about diversifying. Think about some of those things. If you're not sure where to start, you don't know what to do, you know, don't be afraid to send me an email at thefortunatesonpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll do my best to point you in the right direction. Look, I am at great pains here to say I am not a financial advisor. I don't give financial advice. I can tell you what I'm doing. I can tell you what others I know are doing. But basically, I'm happy to help. I'm happy to give you advice. But, you know, don't back everything off of what I say. Do your own research. And if you did ask me to help point you in the right direction, you know, don't get mad if everything doesn't go swimmingly, because as much as things go up, things go down. And the basis with all of this is the sooner you get into preparing for your retirement, the more time you have, because things do go up and down, but over the long term, they tend to go up. The best time to buy things like shares and stocks and bonds are when things fall off, you know, when the economy is not doing so good, like during this COVID thing. And that's where people really get rich. This is where, you know, people got rich during the Great Depression. This is where people will get rich from this COVID thing. Now, it is a bit late, but there are still things that you can go out there and get. There are a lot of people a lot more qualified than me that can tell you what to buy. But me personally, I've always tended to stick with, especially in times like this, I always tend to stick with blue chip type investments, because the odds of a company like, let's say, Ford or Boeing or Google, Amazon, the chances of those companies going bankrupt is nearly zero. If they go bankrupt, we're all going to have a lot more problems than where our money's invested. So anyway, folks, you know, hopefully for some of the younger people out there, I hope that this is a bit of a catalyst to get you into looking at things, looking at investing. You know, do yourself a favor, you know, just go online and just start Googling terms. Look at what a share is. Look at what stocks are. Look at what bonds are. Look at what investment rates are. You know, all those things. There's some really good resources out there. I know it's not the most enjoyable thing to learn. Some people don't really want to know about it, but it's the secret of the world. You know, it's the secret language that the rich speak. That is the reality of it. And if you understand the language, at least you've got a fighting chance. So aside from that, folks, I hope that you've enjoyed this episode. I hope that it's found you well. And again, you know, hang in there, everyone. I love you. I care about everyone who listens. It does mean the world to me. I appreciate it. And if you want to talk to me, like I say, you can email me. You can also go and find me at the Fortunate Son Podcast on Instagram. You can drop a voicemail on the program on Anchor, you know, a little voice message. There's an icon there for that. And aside from that, have a lovely week. I'll talk to you soon, and take care, everyone.